Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm continuing to replay the interviews I did with the creative team and the stars of Bonnie and Clyde the Musical while it was here in Sarasota, Florida, workshopping the show at the Oslo Repertory Theater. And now, of course, it will be opening on Broadway on December 1st. This interview that I'm playing today is with Jeremy Jordan, the Clyde of Bonnie and Clyde. And you can hear in the interview that I am talking about the performance that they did at the Oslo. So you will hear this interview and also a couple of songs from Bonnie and Clyde, the musical. So hang on, here come the show. Show is about being your real self. And one of the things I do to make the point about how important it is to be your real self is that I interview people who make their living or their life with an art, because you can't do that in this culture unless it's actually who you are. Today, I am rebroadcasting an interview I did with Jeremy Jordan when he, starring as Clyde in Bonnie and Clyde, was in Sarasota, Florida, and now he will be creating that role on Broadway on December 1st. When you listen to Jeremy, listen for the way he evaluated who he really was, discovered who he really was, and made a choice that was not the popular choice to be an actor. And yet, of course, it has worked out spectacularly for him. I'm also going to play two songs from the show. The first one is called My Bonnie. It's Jeremy and a guitar. And I want you to hear the sweetness. At the end of the show, after the interview, I will play When I Drive, and then you will hear the energy, the passion, the drive, the recklessness. But here is My Bonnie, followed by my interview with Jeremy Jordan.
I start thinking about my Bonnie from the minute I wake up, and that feeling is the best I ever had. She is in my shaving mirror, she is in my coffee cup. I must be in love or else I'm going mad. I would like to write to Bonnie, tell the girl the way I feel, but I'm better with a car than with a pen. Used to be I'm only happy when I'm set behind a wheel. Now I don't care if I ever drive again. That girl's got something, nothing scares her. Only a piece of luck that's ever come my way. Can't wait to tell her how much I've missed her. Feeling sorry for James Cagney, 'cause he's never kissed. I start dreaming about my Bonnie, just as soon as I'm asleep. They're the kind of dreams that keep you in your bed. I am making love to Bunny, and that sure beats counting sheep. Got a feeling there are good times up ahead.
I'm here with Jeremy Jordan, and I am interviewing Jeremy because he is starring in Bonnie and Clyde. He is Clyde of Bonnie
That's
and
right.
Clyde.
That's right.
And there's a lot of buzz about Bonnie and Clyde, and
there
a lot
is.
Of hope that it will go from here to Broadway.
Certainly, certainly a lot of hope.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No official word, but we're feeling very positive about it.
Well, all right. I want to tell you that I saw you at the meet and greet.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm slightly embarrassed to say this, but I thought, how can this gentle boy do this role?
Yeah.
Because yeah. that's how you seemed to me.
Well, I try to be a nice guy. Yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Yeah.
Even a little soft, it seemed to me.
Huh.
And then I saw you on stage. And it's an amazing performance.
Oh, good. Thank you.
You're very welcome. I mean, it would be an amazing performance in any case, even if I hadn't already decided you couldn't do it.
Oh, so you decided I couldn't do it.
Well, I decided it would be a real stretch for you.
Yeah.
And maybe it isn't. I mean, maybe I just got you wrong altogether, and you're not nearly as gentle as I decided you were.
I can be, but I can also...
Clearly.
...not be. I mean, I think I am more so than not, but I have been cast... more often as a sort of bad boy than a gentle boy.
It's interesting. So I either I just got it wrong or I saw something they don't.
Yeah.
But in any case, it's an amazing performance.
Great.
It's really terrific. And congratulations to you.
Thanks.
So anybody who's listening, if you're anywhere near Sarasota or you really just want to see something spectacular before it's too expensive to see on Broadway, come on down to Sarasota and see Bonnie and Clyde. I do this internet radio show,
uh-huh.
and I interview people who make their living or their life with an art.
Great.
Yeah,
that's
I like
wonderful.
It. Yeah. So I always ask them the same question, and that is, how did it happen?
How did I come about this decision to leave my life?
Yeah, how did it find you? How did it start?
Well, through some sort of strange occurrence in the universe, I was gifted with a singing voice, which nobody, to my knowledge, in my family has more than passable.
Yeah, you have a remarkable instrument.
So I didn't really ever think I was going to do anything with it.
Well, so wait a minute. So did you know this very young? I mean, were you singing in the bathtub? Were you singing?
I was. My mom kind of discovered me singing in the shower, literally. And she's like, go audition for things.
Oh, wait a minute. How old are you when you're singing in the shower?
Oh, man. Probably... in like third or fourth grade. So
really?
I don't
so
know.
What were you singing? Do you remember?
Well, probably something that was a girl song because my voice hadn't changed yet. Probably Celine Dion or something like that.
Oh, songs off the radio.
Yes, of course. Songs
right,
off pop
right,
songs.
Okay.
I mean, that's all I knew.
Right.
You know, as a kid. And
so she said, go audition for things? How interesting.
Well, because my grandma actually was involved in the community theater, so she knew somewhat about it. And
but your mother not?
No, I mean, she knew about it because my mom always loved the theater.
Mm-hmm.
She never participated in it. It's more than maybe like one show in high school.
Yeah.
But I went and auditioned, and apparently I was a horrible actor. So I didn't get cast. I couldn't even get cast in Peter Pan or Oliver Twist.
Really? So like, you kept auditioning for these shows in school, I'm assuming.
No, it was at the community theater. Yeah. Yeah, but... And then, so I kind of stopped doing that. My grandma put me in a couple shows that she had directed, and, you know, it was fun. But when I got to high school, I was always a pretty good student, and I really enjoyed technology and science, and I thought maybe I was going to sort of go into that field. And December before I was a junior in high school, I went to this huge conference in Austin. I'm from Texas. In Austin, it's this huge honor. I got invited, and it was going to start my career and kind of give me like this whole new outlook on life. It was this 10-day amazing thing.
Of what?
It was a technological conference. Mm-hmm. And so all the big technology companies were there, and it was for kids in high school that are, you know, looking to sort of start building their futures. I hated every second of it. Every second of it. I was like, get me out of here.
Do you know what it was about it?
I don't think I connected with anybody there. Except
yes.
for maybe a couple good-looking girls.
Yeah.
But that was it.
Yeah.
You know, when you go for your career and leave only remembering a couple pretty faces,
yeah.
then you probably wasn't the best. But so I came back not knowing what I wanted to do with my life. And
so let me stop you for a second. So I imagine this as something of a crisis.
A little bit for somebody who always thought that that's what
yeah.
he was going to do, and realizing that I don't think I could be happy doing this.
Right.
And I came back, and I was always in choir, so we had done a performance at the community theater, one of our choir concerts or something, and somebody at the community theater, I had a big solo, somebody had come up to me and said, do you want to do one of these kids shows that we're doing, because I think your voice would be great in it, and I said, yeah, great. So I did it, and then I kind of started landing in choruses of the bigger shows.
So is that you were in chorus for this show?
It was a little kid's show. I played like the bad guy. It was like a little...
Starting out, right, with the
yeah.
bad guy, right?
I mean, but it was such a goofy show, you know, about little kids, gangsters. I mean, it was...
Oh, gangsters yet again.
Yeah.
Starting your career as a gangster.
Listen,
right?
I have not made these. You're giving me connections that I haven't even seen before, but... But then I kind of did a couple chorus parts, and I got a couple little supporting roles, and I actually got cast in a show later in my junior year, where I played a mute character in a musical. And I said, why are you casting me as a mute? I'm a singer. And I was like, all right, I'll do it. I don't have anything else to do. And it sort of forced me to become an actor.
An actor. Mm-hmm.
And instantly I fell in love with it, and I said, okay, this is what I want to do. Luckily, one of the guys in the show with me is an older fellow who kind of became a mentor to me, and he had always wanted to pursue theater, and he never got to, so he kind of vicariously relived his youth through me. He's like, I'm going to get you started. I'm going to give you songs you can sing. I'm going to help you find schools to audition at.
Wow.
And all this stuff. And I said, well, I wanted to get out of Texas. I wanted to kind of go up north somewhere where, you know, I can make a change. And I went to school at Ithaca College, which is a great theater school. And
okay, so now...
Yeah, that's how that started.
Did you make this decision at that point, or did you... It's not clear to me whether you decided or you just sort of rode this. Do you know what I mean?
I did both, because I decided without knowing if I was any good. Because I came from not a small town, but a town that only had community theater. There was no professional theater. There was nothing to gauge what kind of talent I had
wow.
against. People told me I was good, and I said, okay, well, what's your word? Where have you been? Nowhere. You've been here.
Right.
And so the fact that I was going up to the Northeast to audition at NYU and Carnegie Mellon and Ithaca and Cincinnati Conservatory, these huge prestigious programs, I had no idea that if I was going to get in. And I had like one or two backup schools that I knew would accept me on my grades.
Right.
I was like, okay, well, I can still study, you know, and then I can build. And
okay, why don't I stop you? So it's really interesting. You said in those early auditions,
mm-hmm.
I could not act. I was not an actor.
I don't know what made me become an actor, but I was clearly not good. I knew I could sing when I was a little kid.
Okay, so you didn't... There's no place where you studied and learned it. You just found it inside yourself?
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm asking?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just sort of grew into it, I suppose. I don't really know. When I was a little kid, I just remember going in there. I don't know if I had like a nervous tic when I was like, or I was so like shy that I was like,
oh, maybe they saw that gentle guy.
Yeah. Like, why? We're not going to cast that kid. He can't even, you know, look me in the eye. So maybe that was it. And maybe I had it in me, and I was just so shy that I couldn't let it out. And as I got a little older, I've always was shy all through high school. I don't really feel like I'm that way anymore. But I started to realize that by going on stage, I didn't have to be my shy self. I could be somebody else. And that was probably the most intriguing thing, and it has remained to be the most intriguing thing about being an actor, is getting a chance to get outside of your skin.
Well, and
that's
sort of
the artist in me, I suppose.
Well, yeah, I'm sure that's right. And at the risk of being horribly repetitive and self-serving, maybe it was a little of that shy kid that I saw.
Perhaps.
Because even now, you are not exactly the way I saw you at the meet and greet.
Yeah.
You were kind of quiet. And
well, I didn't know anybody.
Yes, I know.
I didn't know anybody.
I know.
Not really. And I do have some of that shy kid quality in me. Like, for instance, I like to write music and stuff. I mean, I don't think I'm particularly great at it, but I like to do that. But I don't ever share it with anybody. It's like, for me, but it kind of ties to that whole thing of going on stage being somebody else.
Yes.
But if I went on stage and had to be myself, I would just be like looking left and right and just kind of twiddling my thumbs and being, I feel like I would just be nervous all the time.
It's so interesting because it is something that actors have that the rest of us don't.
Mm-hmm.
And that is an ability to try on different lives.
Hmm.
You know, to be you know, to be other than we are.
Yeah, exactly.
And I do think that it takes a special kind of sensitivity, you know, to allow yourself to stand behind the person that's...
I think also, since I was a shy, quiet kid growing up, I sort of inadvertently became an observer. And I sort of could see all those people and see, like, why did they do that? Or, like, why? And I sort of, unbeknownst to me, sort of developed this sort of innate, you know, sense of why people do things and like, how people do things so much differently than I do things. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Why they do that? I would never do that.
Or, on the other hand, I can use that.
Yeah, exactly.
So you have like a catalog, or you've got
a
data bank.
For instance, Clyde is a complete psychopath. One second he's boyishly charming, the next second he's, you know, angry and about to blow somebody's face off. You know, it's.
Yeah, actually, I wanted to get to talk about that a little bit.
Sure.
About what that feels like to do.
It feels great, actually. Oddly enough, I mean, because when you get to do stuff like that, especially with a person like myself, where I don't say that I would keep all my anger inside. You know, I try not to let anger enter me at all. And if I do, I try to just breathe it out and let it go. But you know, sometimes it's nice to, because I don't feel like I want to in my life put that out in the universe. I don't want to be that angry, like, person that gets mad all the time easily, and I just feel like that's not...
At the drop of a hat.
Life's too short, you know, you don't want to have to, you know, have to do that, deal with that. But at the same time, when I have a character that presents itself that can do that, it's just, like, almost cathartic. There's a scene where, towards the beginning, where I've escaped out of jail, and I come to meet my brother. And it starts off so happy, and we sing this song about how life's going to be so great. And then he tells me that he's going to go back to jail because we both escaped together. And I just start to lose it. And he kind of, it's like a slow burn. And all of a sudden, he's like just, you know, pounding his brother just physically and verbally. And, it is kind of cathartic.
Well, you know, this is real interesting to me. Because I understand perfectly well the desire not to be in the world as an angry person. But I do think that when one has been made angry, that anger doesn't go go away. It stays there. Right.
Certainly not.
And so this is a great gift to somebody who doesn't like to express his anger.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like you save it up.
It takes a lot to make me angry.
You're pretty easygoing.
I'm very easygoing, and I feel like I understand why people do things,
yes.
Even if they're doing horrible things.
Yes.
I feel like I can easily understand why they do that. And so as a result, I'm like, well, I can't be mad at you. I mean, I can be mad at you.
Right.
But I can also forgive you.
I really understand this. So can you think, you don't have to give any specifics if you can,
mm-hmm.
can you think of something that did actually make you angry?
Oh, God, yes, I can think of plenty of things.
Do you mind telling me?
Oh, wow. Sure. Here's a situation where I suppressed that anger quite vividly. And there's a couple that I didn't suppress it, but this one, I think it's more interesting. Somebody very close to me whom I sort of idolized told me that she had been a drug addict and alcoholic my entire life.
Wow.
And I idolize this person, and sometimes we'll have a drink, but I don't do any sort of drugs or anything. And I kind of had used this person as like a...
Role model.
Look at them. Yeah, role model. And I said, really? My entire life, I've looked at you, and I've sort of done this. I'm like, wow, that's really interesting. I can't believe that I... And I was angry at myself because I felt like I had lived my entire life in denial, and I felt like they had given me this sense of denial, and that had led to me being in denial about other things.
Wow.
And I smiled, and I said, well, thank you for telling me. And it was very brave of them to tell me. That.
Was she still?
No. She's been sober for 10 years now.
Right.
But she had gone through programs, and, you know, it's part of that sort of whole step process.
Yeah.
And
She was making amends.
Exactly,
she
was.
Right.
And so I could forgive her for that, but at the same time, just years and years of my childhood flashed before my eyes, and realizations, like, I remember that moment. I was like, oh, she was really mad at me. Oh, no. And I remember that moment, like, well, why was she doing that? And then it all just suddenly became clear, and I became so furious. I, like, went into my room and started hitting things, I'm so incredibly happy for her that she was able to make that change in her life.
But it's interesting because what it sounds like is that the person you were mostly mad at was you.
For not realizing.
For not getting it, right?
For not getting
right.
it, for being so blind to it. Of course, I hadn't been exposed to it. Well, I had. But I hadn't known that I was exposed to it, so I didn't know what the signs were.
Well... Boy, that's so interesting. But because the thing you chose to talk about is a thing where you're angry at yourself, not angry at somebody else, right?
Huh. Well, isn't that what most anger is?
I think it probably is.
I mean, if you think about it, why would you get angry at somebody for doing something? Because it's not something that you would ever do.
You know, I love this because I am often saying to people... That you can't essentially blame a person for who they are.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no point in being angry at it. And yet we live in a culture
mm-hmm.
that pretty much idolizes, you pissed me off. I am angry because you did this.
Yeah.
When in fact, I think what you're saying is what I believe, which
yeah.
is you did that and then I chose to be angry.
Exactly.
Right.
I mean, there are some situations where you can be angry. Like, I can be angry that there are terrorists in the world. I can't really be angry at myself about that because I...
Good.
I mean, I can be angry at myself because I haven't taken steps to do something about it. But, I mean, it's such a huge thing that I don't...
So I find myself wondering, if you are able to be as self-forgiving
mm-hmm.
as you are... of everybody else.
Yeah. Am I? Well, probably not.
No, I
probably
think maybe not.
No, I think probably not. No,
So you're holding yourself to a standard you're not holding anybody else to.
Well, don't we all?
No, we don't
think
all.
So?
Oh, no, I know we don't all.
Huh.
No, I think most people do it the other way around. I think most people are letting themselves off the hook and holding everybody else to a higher standard.
That's because they don't know.
But... I want to tell you that you
secretly can, they hold themselves accountable, but they don't want anybody
else
to know that.
Right.
They don't.
No.
That's what I think.
Okay, so so this rage
sure
can fuel Clive.
Clyde, yeah.
Clyde, did I say Clyde?
You said Clive.
Amazing.
Hello, I'm Clive Barrow. I will be killing you now.
Right.
Yes, but it's not what fuels him. It's not.
It's not what fuels him. I was thinking it was fueling you.
Oh, yes.
You know, no, what fuels him?
What fuels him is, he's a very passionate person, and I think, well, you know what, I'm lying. It's part of what fuels him. But there are many things that fuel him. Family, I think, is the main thing, and sort of his background and where he came from is he came from such a poor, you know, awful place that the only way he had such huge dreams. The same thing with Bonnie is they both have these huge dreams. Well, how am I supposed to get from, you know? And there's a line in the show where Bonnie tells Clyde, I don't know anybody else that ever wanted to get out of West Dallas or tried to get out, because once you start there, they don't know anybody that got out or made it big.
Yeah, they don't know that out is possible.
Exactly, and the only people they know that have ever accomplished that, or at least for Clyde, are criminals.
Well, for her, are movie stars.
Movie stars that just happen to be glamorous and beautiful and somehow got to Hollywood and were discovered on the street or something.
Right.
But for him, the only people that have made it big And back in those days, a lot of poor folks sort of came to idolize criminals because they were not treated well by the government and by the law, and they were sort of thrown aside.
They were, right.
And
these people had power.
And these people could say F you to the man.
They could design their own lives.
Yeah.
They were in charge of their lives, which most people were not.
Yeah.
I keep thinking, you know, of the song Made in America, which is what that is all about,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
And also the other thing I was thinking about is the, you know, the drug culture in inner cities, mm-hmm. is that a lot of kids grow up seeing that the only people who seem to have any money and any power are those, mm-hmm. are drug people.
And these kind of kids in Clyde as well aren't educated to...
No, there are no other choices.
Yeah, and they're also not educated to the fact that there could be another way, and they don't see all they see is like crazy rich people or crazy poor people.
Right.
And then the only people that they've seen that can be from poor to rich are these
criminals.
Criminals. Right.
And
so I think mainly what drives him is, at least at the beginning, is this need to become something more, to rise above his roots, and to sort of build a better life for himself and for his family, because he comes back and he helps his family, like he helps his dad buy a new gas station or buy some new land, and they always come back for their family. So I think that's what initially fuels him, and then, you know, sooner or later he busts out of prison and then he's just on the run, and there's no going back from that, because you can't really stay in one place and still be that devoted to your family. I mean, they literally could have gone to another country or across the United States to California or to New York and been fine.
Right.
And maybe still done what they needed to do there and moved on to the next place, but they're so devoted to their family that it's what ultimately killed them, because they had to come back and they had to see them and sort of help them if they could. And that's also their sort of love for each other is sort of part of that feeling of family. And that feeling of loyalty and respect to their roots.
Does that have meaning for you?
Not as much, no. But I do feel incredibly loyal to the people that I do love. So yes, I mean, the loyalty, yes, but I don't have any problem
seeing your life as separate.
Yeah, I mean, I have a girlfriend who is very important, special to me, and I don't want to be away from her, but I can be away from my family.
Yeah.
Because I know that they're there for me, and I know that they love me, and I can build a separate life away from them. But the life that I am building as an adult, I sort of like...
You're holding on to it.
I want to hold on to it, of course. And I, like a lot of actors go on tour, and they like going for long runs out of the country.
And I don't think that I would like that. I think I like to find a place and kind of... And I can move. I can move and create a new home with the people I love, you know, but I...
But you want the home.
But I want the home, and I want the some place to stay. I moved around so much as a little kid. I mean, I kind of... I wasn't poor, but I was not middle class, you know. I was sort of between the two, and so we moved around a lot when I was a kid, and I think that sort of instilled in me this need, kind of like Clyde, to
have something solid,
have a stronghold, have something. Solid. So for Clyde, he needed to be rich. He needed to be rich and sort of have money and feel secure. And for me, I needed sort of stability to become secure.
Yes.
Although I did choose one of the most unstable careers.
I was just going to say.
So I think a part of me still, that's still ingrained in me. Because I do tend to get bored with things. And so I think being an actor has been the perfect cure for that. So everything else can be fine and stable. And
well, there's only one real solution to that, and that is to be successful enough at it so that you can be stable and still have... the challenges of different roles and different places
that's and I feel like I'm on my way to that, so I mean I couldn't be happier for the opportunities that I've been given, you know. And I've done a couple of Broadway shows, mm-hmm. and that certainly helps pay the bills more than most other theater gigs, and I'm trying to get into TV and film as well, and but I think my heart is in the theater.
Because?
Well, because it's so malleable, and it changes so much every night. When you do film or TV, you do a bunch of takes, okay, so you get to try it different ways.
Right.
But generally, I mean, unless you're some huge bigwig, you don't really choose what goes in the movie, and once it's there, it's there. It's never going to change.
That's right.
I mean, TV, I suppose, is a little different because your character can evolve, you know, but like I said, once you do it, you do it, and it's usually somebody else's decision what gets put in there, And stage is so much more an actor's medium. It really is, because once the show's put up, and it's usually much more collaborative, ours was certainly more collaborative than most shows that I've been a part of. And once it's sort of up, and once you've sort of decided where your characters and everything is, you're doing the show 8 times a week, you're getting different responses from the audience,
right.
You can kind of tweak little things here and there, and sort of... just get to relive it.
I was just going to say, you are actually living it.
Yeah.
It's not the same as you're doing it and then it's done. You're living it every day.
I always tell people, everybody's always talking about how Daniel Day-Lewis is like this crazy method actor. Like, whenever he does a role, he's like, he lives it in his life. It's like, well, the guy just needs to go do something on stage. And then he can live it 8 times a week and then be a normal person the rest of the time.
Yes, he doesn't have to.
You can be that character, like, you know, a good 30-something hours a week.
Right, and then leave it.
And then just be yourself, like...
But somebody might not want to be themselves.
Yeah, well, that's true. I love being myself, but I also love being other people.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just for a short period of time.
So, you are doing musicals primarily.
Primarily, yes.
Are you looking to do more serious stuff?
Yeah, certainly. Well, it's funny, I did a lot of musicals in college, and my first couple gigs out of college were, I did a Law & Order episode, and I did a straight play. And then I sort of came back to musicals. But I love to sing, and I think when done right, musicals are the ultimate art form for an actor, because you get, I mean, I'm not much of like a dancer or anything, so the kind of shows that I do are more actor-based, actor-singer-based, you know. I mean, while the big showy show-tune shows are fun, I think stuff like this, which is like a play with music, somebody described it to me the other day as a sort of ballad.
Yes.
I always thought that was really cool.
Mm-hmm. And it is a play with music. I mean, it's very...
Yeah,
you guys are singing all the time.
And I think that's sort of, for me, that's the best sort of combination, is something that feels grounded and real, but then also allows me to express with music, which I think, I mean, usually what they say is when you can't speak anymore, when it gets so intense that you can't speak, that's when you sing.
Wow, I
didn't
get that.
And that's kind of what... people just, that's how you want a musical to be, is that it gets so emotional, or it gets so
heightened to that. There's nothing left to do but to sing it.
It sounds cheesy, but
how else do I express that?
The song takes it to another level.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, I know that's true.
Yeah.
Okay, so is there something you'd really like to do?
I'm doing it.
Ooh. How many people can say that?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And, I can't be happier. After this, I'm filming my first feature film.
Really?
Which is a musical.
What is it?
It's called, it's not really out there, but it is, whatever, I don't care. It's called Joyful Noise, and it's a big feature film starring Queen Latifah and Dolly Parton.
Oh, my God!
And, you know, I'm playing a lead role, and I've never done a big film before, so it's going to be new territory, but I think it's going to be fun and exciting. And
when are you shooting it?
Right after this is over.
Really?
January.
After this?
Yeah.
Wow.
January. Where Not after this interview.
No. Where are you shooting?
In Georgia. It's about a gospel choir.
Oh,
Georgia.
It's wonderful.
So it's going to be really cool. So it's going to be, it's a musical one, man, and there's going to be a lot of gospel music, which is really fun to sing.
Yes.
Yeah. So, I'm excited about
that. Oh, my God, it's
And
wonderful.
Then hopefully after that's done, maybe...
Broadway.
Maybe Bonnie and Clyde will be on Broadway. You can only hope and dream, so...
No.
Oh, man, that sounded cheesy. Sorry, radio listeners.
What, the hope and dream line?
All you can do is hope and dream. That's
wow.
Not, I try not to be too corny, but I'd feel that way, yeah.
Of course, it's the truth.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's nothing much more you can do about it except what you're already doing, which is... Doing the very best you can do.
Yeah, and I know it's not always going to be, you know...
Do you?
This perfect. I know. I mean, I realize it has been less than perfect for me, and it's been less than perfect for people I love, but it has been this perfect for me before, and I know it will be again, and I know it will be for everybody. So you just got to hold it out.
Yeah.
And do everything you can to get
to make
that,
it so.
To get to that place.
Yeah, to make it so.
Yeah.
Okay, I like to ask, having given so much of your life to this this work, is there anything you want to say about what that's like?
About what
giving your life to
being an actor?
Yeah.
I mean, there's great things about it. I mean, it's always so interesting. Before I kind of went to Broadway and stuff, it was much different to talk about it to people, because people are like, you're an actor, what are you doing? I'm like, well, you know, I got out of school and I'm auditioning and, you know, I'm
what
a
you
waiter
do?
And
right. What do you do for
and
your
like,
living?
Oh, that sounds great. But now I can say, well, I've done a couple of Broadway shows, I'm, you know, and even if I'm not in a show and I'm saying I'm auditioning, I'm like, but I know personally that I've done this stuff, and I know that I'm well off enough to be fine with it. So I've certainly grown more confident about living my life as an actor. And I think it does affect your life in different ways. I think you become more open. Like I said, for me at least, I've become much more open to what makes people do the things they do, and because I am open to why people do the things they do, like I said, I can forgive them much more easily for things that I normally would think are
you would
are
judge
bad. Yeah, or where I would judge.
Yeah.
And I certainly still judge.
No, that's such an interesting thing. I've never heard anybody say it, but I think it's the truth. If you play a role,
mm-hmm.
where you are doing things that you would otherwise judge people for doing,
mm-hmm.
you need to, as an actor, know why you're doing those things. They have to be...
Exactly.
It has to be acceptable to you, right?
And the great thing about Clyde is that he understands after he... Like, the first time he kills somebody, he freaks out.
Yes.
He doesn't just... And even there's a scene where he is really abused in jail, and I don't know, it's sort of still growing for me, because I that sort of thing I've never experienced, and I'm still finding, you know, the exact energy. But I've gotten to a place now where I've realized that, you know, he ends up killing the guy that was abusing him, and even then, he sort of is lost that he could do that. And then after that, he kind of transforms, and sooner or later he becomes okay with it. But he's never just killed to kill. He's not a maniac. He's not insane. He doesn't have any mental problems. He's just psychopathic. I mean,
that is a mental problem.
But I mean, it's not. I'm sorry. Yes, it is. But he's not like, oh, look, there's a kid over there. I don't like the way he's smiling. I'm going to kill him.
Right.
It's nothing.
No, he
like
does
that.
Have a reason for what he does.
Anytime he's killed anybody, except for that guy in prison, which it's still a reason, has been in defense or because they were shooting at him.
Right.
And not saying that makes it okay. I mean, they had bigger and better guns than anybody that was shooting at them, so that's why they always got away. but it's interesting to explore that he didn't really like killing people. For instance, when normally what would happen if they got caught, they would pull out their big old guns, freak out the officers or something, make them drop their guns. They would kidnap these officers and take them for a ride, and Bonnie would love it. She would just have conversations with them and get to know them, and Clyde wouldn't have to kill anybody, and they would drop them off like 100 miles away on the side of the road, give them some cash to get a bus, and just leave. Like, there was no way of tracking them or anything.
Because it wasn't about trying to hurt anybody.
It wasn't.
No.
It was.
There's that wonderful line where the cop says, you know, they held up the this and they went, how did they know it was them? Well, Bonnie gave autographs.
Exactly.
You know.
And there's, what's also sort of is telling is that, you know, Clyde says that the bank took the farms.
Right.
Everybody
right.
knew, including his family's farm. That's why he lived in such poverty for such a long time. And so I think
one of the reasons that he's okay with it. Where he says, you know, how can you not have any money? You have everybody's money.
Yeah, you own everything.
How can you not have any money?
Yeah, and so that sort of is something else that makes it okay for him to be robbed.
Okay, so when you play that, you have to feel that.
Sure.
That it's, you have to feel that that's okay. It has to make sense for you.
Yeah.
And so if you can do that, then it would be very hard to judge somebody other than Clyde, somebody else who does that behavior. You can see in it.
Yeah, that's what I hope that the audience leaves with.
Yes.
Is because I mean, you look at the story on paper of Bonnie and Clyde. You look at what they did, all their crimes, and what happened in their life. You're like, okay, well, these two guys in love, but they were criminals. They killed a lot of people. They were bad people. And people leave, what I'm hoping is that what we do with the show is people leave the theater feeling like kind of sad about these kids, and, you know, and that they died, and that the way that things ended up happening.
Sort of feeling
connected to them somehow.
Well, and also that clever and resourceful as they were, their world didn't give them any way to use that other than how they did.
Yeah. Well, they had a horrible, horrible bad luck with everything they did. Usually when they escaped, it was by, you know, a fraction of an inch, and it was by some luck. But the luck up to that point was never very well. I mean, they never lived any sort of luxury. When they robbed banks, they usually got off minimal amounts of money. They slept in the woods. They slept in their cars. They, you know, ate boxed dinners. They had a lot of beans. I mean,
did you research this?
Oh yeah, lots of research. What's been great is there's been a recent sort of resurgence of Bonnie and Clyde.
Interest in them.
I think a lot of sort of recently a lot of new material has come to light, like people's unpublished memoirs and sort of documents or something that had been previously sealed or unsealed, stuff like that, you know. And so a few books and a couple new documentaries have come out within the past 10 years, and so people are really sort of uncovering all this interesting stuff that most of it sort of humanizes them, because and sort of dispels all these horrible rumors. Like, there's actually no evidence of Bonnie ever killing anyone. There's plenty of evidence of Clyde killing people, but there is no evidence of her killing. And the main killing that she's accredited with is two motorcycle cops on the side of the road had, like, pulled them over, and everybody thinks that she came out, shot one in the head, and then, like, kicked his head like a soccer ball or something. That was, like, the whole... And the fact is that she was horribly... Her leg had been maimed recently before that in a car accident, and she couldn't even walk without the assistance of anybody else, much less get out of the car, pick up a gun, and start shooting people. And all the records of people that knew her and loved her said that that wasn't her by any means. She liked to talk to people and, like, get to know them, and she kind of fell in love with the wrong guy.
Well, I don't know about that.
The wrong guy?
Well, I mean, a guy who got her killed,
but yeah,
not the wrong guy. I mean, if she fell in love with the guy that she had to love. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to say this any other way. Do you know what I mean?
She fell in love with a guy that brought out what she wanted.
That's
to be.
Right. That's
if
right.
If you
a guy who saw her
for what
who
she
really saw
could
her.
Be.
That's
yeah.
right. Well, who saw her for what she wanted to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's
and
nothing
her,
more powerful than that.
Yeah.
That somebody sees the you want to be.
Yeah. When they in our show, I mean, it was a little different in real life, but in our show, when they first meet, he immediately says, "You should be a movie star."
Ah, yeah, right.
And she's like, "I want to be
That's
a movie
right,
star.
Right.
Look at this is my headshot that
right.
I took. It took me 4 weeks pay to get this headshot." Like, and he just feels that in her, and she just feels that sort of ego in him.
In him.
Yeah.
See, I mean, for example, you know, Ted, the good guy.
Yeah.
He wants her to be somebody she doesn't want to be.
Yeah.
So she can't love that.
Her mother also wants to. Her to be
everybody
kind of
does, right, everybody. But, so when you say she fell in love with the wrong guy, I mean, she may not have chosen, had she had prescience to know that she was going to be dead by the time she was, what?
23.
I think 23. Well, close enough, anyway.
Yeah.
But she fell in love with the guy who made her feel the way she wants to feel.
Yeah.
That can't be the wrong guy.
Yeah.
That can be the only guy.
Well, and what's interesting, and we explore this just a little bit in our show, is that when they loved passionately.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They fought passionately. Like, they would, you know, go out.
Oh, you don't
woods.
Do much
they
of that.
They would go out in that to the woods and come back with bruises all over their faces. Both of them.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you didn't, you guys don't do that much of that.
Well, there's that scene where I slap the crap out of her and then she slaps me right back.
Yeah, right.
And that's sort of how we address it in our show.
Yeah,
but,
yeah. Well, okay, so now, I want to go back to what you were saying, which I don't think I've heard anybody else say. I'm sure that everybody feels like this, but nobody has actually said it. The difference between when you're starting out saying that you're an actor and how you feel about being an actor when you're starting out, and then when you have success, when you have the sense that this is, that you can be proud of this.
Yeah.
Right? How different that is.
It is. I mean, when I first started acting, you know, I would go home and I would talk to some of my relatives and, like, yeah, what are you doing with your life? Well, I'm an actor. Like, really? What have you done? I was like, well, you know, I did a couple shows in college and, you know, I'm auditioning in New York, living in New York.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
So like, you know, I'm out there, I'm trying to get it done. And then you find yourself making excuses.
Right. And you're,
like,
defending
and
it.
Defending and defending and defending. And now I'll go home and they're like, hey, Broadway star. Like, and they all want to talk about me because I'm like the big shot of the family now.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it's certainly loads different in it, and it feels great.
Oh,
I mean, sure.
Okay, so
it's great to have success in anything.
No, that's true. But if you had gone home and said, and they said, "What are you doing?" and you said, "Well, you know, I just graduated with my accounting career, my accounting degree, and you know, I'm looking for a gig." That, well, you wouldn't have said that. I'm looking
for a job.
Right, I'm looking for a job, right?
Yeah.
You would not have felt so defensive of it, even if you didn't have a job in accounting yet?
Because I just graduated from college with a major degree in a business that could get me a lot of money.
Right, that's right.
Where I graduated college with a fine arts degree.
Which could get you nothing, maybe.
Which I know plenty of people at it.
That's right. That specifically has
gotten
that's
not
right.
much.
And that point is, I think, so important because it's wonderful for you, Jeremy. Mm-hmm.
Well, and what's wonderful and makes me feel so grateful is that I've achieved it more quickly than most people mm-hmm. can say.
How old are you?
I'm 26.
Oh, my God.
Just turned 26. And, I mean, I have plenty of friends that are a little bit older than I am, and they're still
struggling.
I wouldn't say struggling, more striving. Like, they're just really trying to find a place for themselves, and a lot, so many people that graduate with the degree I graduated with don't end up doing that with their
lives. And the dreams you graduated with.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, but at the same time, I don't look down upon them for that, because sometimes that's not, you know, where life takes you. And luckily, life took me into the... Luckily, I figured out that my dreams of being an engineer and a scientist and a computer genius weren't going to be where my life was going to go before I got to college.
Okay. Any last thoughts?
People that want to be actors that don't end up being actors, at least they've figured that out. You know, there's people that haven't figured out that that's not what they're meant to do. You know, and that's...
It's wonderful.
That upsets me.
It's so wonderful for you to do this because the theme of The Lynn Show, which is my show.
The Lynn Show,
yes.
And you are Lynn.
I am. I thought that made sense.
It does.
Thank you. Is that when we're kids, most of us do something or act in some way that doesn't go down well with our families, mm-hmm. and our families will let us know that this is not all right. And then we sort of tuck that away, mm-hmm. and we forget that we have that ability mm-hmm. or that capacity or that
sure.
sensitivity. It's my belief, and I think you won't disagree with me here.
I probably won't.
That it is in all of our best interests to discover all that we are.
Absolutely.
And have access to all that we are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And most people never hear that.
Mm-hmm.
So they're never encouraged to look for what's really inside them.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And I think you are someone who is more in touch with more of who he is. Partly, I think that, because in order to be an actor, it has to be who you are, or you cannot take the challenges that being an actor in our culture requires.
No, of course.
Right? So
I think when I made that decision, I that was sort of my first step to fearlessness. It's like the first step to knowing that you have a problem, to conquering your problem is knowing that you have a problem. First step to conquering fear is knowing that you're afraid. And that might be enough for some things.
That's exactly what I think.
Yeah. That's what I feel.
And one of the reasons that I interview people who make a living or a life with an art
mm-hmm.
is because they all had to confront what you were describing earlier, that I have to defend who I am because the rest of the world doesn't see it as this glorious thing, you know?
Yeah, not at first, not at first. But you know what, though? I think that if I hadn't become successful at this point, if I had still believed in myself, I think that I'd still be okay with it.
I think you would,
you know?
Too.
I think the tough part was that nobody that I know or nobody in my family had ever
tried it.
Done it.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're like, really? You want to try this sort of thing? Like, are you sure?
Are you sure? Right.
You know, and my family was very supportive, you know, but that doesn't mean that they weren't.
That they thought it was a great thing.
Sure, you know, of course. And now, of course, it's turned into a great thing, and so.
You know, yeah. So I just want to repeat what you just said, because I think it's the truth, and I think it's a good place to stop, that even if it hadn't been as successful as quickly as it has, that you would still be all right with it.
Yeah.
I believe that's true. And I believe it's true because it is who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And that realization, I am who I am, and that is fine.
Mm-hmm.
I want to stop there.
Perfect.
Thank you, Jeremy
Thank
Jordan.
Thank you, Lynn. I appreciate it.
Would that we all were there. I am who I am, and it is fine. Whether the world approves of it, whether it is who I thought I had to be, whether everyone else is like me. I am who I am, and it is fine. I don't know how I can improve on that. So I am simply going to end the show the way I always do, by thanking Josh Hackney, without whom there would be no show, and telling you that I hope that you have heard something that you can use in this show. Something in the interview that sparked you or inspired you or turned you on or made you laugh, or even just enjoying the talent, the skill, the music, the passion of Jeremy Jordan in both the song you heard in the beginning and the song I'm about to play, When I Drive, which is the sort of exuberant statement of who he is as Clyde Barrow. And you can hear not only Clyde Barrow, because Jeremy Jordan is so definitely Clyde Barrow in this show, but you can hear Jeremy Jordan in it too. I hope that you all get a chance to see Bonnie and Clyde the musical. It is so well worth seeing. And here's just a taste. Oh, and I hope that you'll be back next week, because I will be. Here, Jeremy Jordan, When I Drive.
Ain't no car too smart for me. Got the whole thing figured out. Two-door hardtop Model T, limousine or runabout. Putting me behind the wheel and stand well back like a Cracker Jack. I'll get your heart pumping.
Ain't no car that you can't drive. I would bet my life on that. Hot Rod Roadster pickup truck, 40 miles in nothing flat.
Woo! Ain't nothing better than a drive through town with the throttle down.
Watch the old folk jumping.
Watch out! And I try when I drive. I'm in love, I'm alive. And I forget about everything I hate. When I drive, I can read 65. I won't pay the law no mind. They'll always be behind. And man, that just feels great.
Hey, look, there's danger up ahead. Here comes a curve.
Will you stop tugging at my sleeve? Just hold your nerve. Give me a full tank and an open road. And watch me explode. Look at me, I'm driving. When I drive, I'm in love, I'm alive. And I forget about everything I hate.
When you drive, life is great when you drive.
We are the heroes who the people look up to. And brother, that feels great. I can blow. I can fly.
This is how
I wanna live, I wanna die.
I'm in love.
I'm alive when I drive.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. See that I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage? Let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle